Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April with the Recording Library of West Texas. Due to social distancing, I'm recording the Midland Reporter-Telegram at home. My apologies in advance for any noise heard in the background. County. Hospital Sales Tax Election Campaign Ramps Up. By Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. There are 35 days between Tuesday and the start of early voting in the Midland County Hospital District's election to raise the sales tax to help deal with an expected drop in federal funding. If that short amount of time between now and when Midland County residents can start voting wasn't enough, the community has to deal with a significant drop in oil prices and the coronavirus outbreak across the nation. Richard Coates of OGX Resources and co-chair of the campaign told the Reporter-Telegram last week there is not much that can be done about the timing or conditions in place. As of February 14, the ballot item became locked in, and campaign leaders have no alternative but to follow through. The election to add a quarter cent to the sales tax across the county, including inside the city, takes place on May 2. Early voting is scheduled to begin April 20. The price of West Texas Intermediate crude on Monday settled at $28.70, a far cry from the $52 average at the end of January when elected hospital district leaders approved the election. Coates said campaign officials recognize the local economy is entering into a very difficult period. Even in these difficult times, it's vital to support the healthcare infrastructure that Midland Health has built to serve everyone in our community, Coates said. The sales tax revenues that we projected will probably decline as a result of the slowing business activity. But it's in our view the sales tax still remains the best vehicle to share the costs with everyone who uses it. Should voters approve the ballot item, the tax increase could provide an extra $30 million for the hospital district to use for community health care services funding, including nonprofits, the Midland Community Health Care Services, contracted physicians, mental health services, ER calls, and Texas Tech University Health Science Center. Hospital district officials said that more than $40.147 million was spent in those areas in fiscal year 2019. Midland Health President and CEO Russell Myers has stated that reductions in Medicaid supplement reimbursements are projected to reach $23 million in fiscal year 2021 and $38.4 million by fiscal year 2024. That would mean net income would fall from between $5 million and $10 million this fiscal year to a deficit of $20 million in a fiscal year 2024. Another challenge campaign officials face is getting out the message around the noise created by conversations having to do with coronavirus. Myers said Sunday there had not been a confirmed case in Midland County. Still, the community has been, and will continue to be, impacted for weeks and probably months to come. Coates said Midland Health does provide incentives to keep doctors and other health care workers and recruit others to Midland. That's one of the things potentially at risk if we don't have any money to continue to fund those things, Coates said. So, without a doubt, things like coronavirus, as tragic as it is a reminder of how important having adequate medical providers here locally is to the community. Coates said TV commercials will start in the next week, and campaign officials are reaching out to schedule meetings with groups and organizations across town. Stepping in to help. Sam's Club. Border Patrol agent recounts stabbing. By J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hearstnp.com. Supervisory Border Patrol agent Bernie Ramirez was at the Sam's Club in Midland on Saturday night with his family when he heard an altercation. "My wife and I are originally from the Midland-Odessa area," he said. "We still have family here, and we came up here to visit family and do some shopping before heading back on Sunday." Ramirez, who is stationed in Marfa and lives in Alpine, said they were almost done with their shopping and were headed to the checkout line when they heard a commotion. Initially, with everything that had been going on the weeks prior when all these individuals were fighting over supply shortages, and so I initially thought that it had something to do with that. He said he was making his way over to the meat section, where the commotion was coming from. "I hear a woman screaming, and then a young child crying. So that's when I knew the situation was more than just a simple altercation," he said. He said that as he ran over, he saw a lot of blood on the floor. "I came upon two individuals there on the floor. One individual had the other guy in a chokehold," he said. "At that point, I identified myself as a federal agent with the Border Patrol." Ramirez told them to break it up, but then realized one of the individuals was a SAMS employee, later identified as Zach Owen. "He looked at me, and he told me that this guy just stabbed somebody, and he's got a knife," he said. At that point, Ramirez told Owen to let him go, and then took control of the individual, later identified as Jose Gomez, 19. He said he changed from a civilian to a law enforcement mindset. He secured Gomez, searched for any other weapons, and waited for police to arrive. Ramirez said that his daughter, Tally, 9, was pretty shaken up by the situation. "She was shaking," he said. "She was, I think, more scared of the fact that I might get hurt." He said Owen was a hero in this situation. "Had he not taken charge and done what he did, I think the matters would have been extremely worse," Ramirez said. Ramirez also credited a manager and other Sam's Club employees for sectioning off the area. He said that it's important to not be afraid during this time. "Us, as Border Patrol agents, and also CBP, Customs and Border Protection officers, we live and work not just here in Midland-Odessa area, but the surrounding communities. We have families in these communities, and we just want to make sure we provide a safe environment, not just for us and our families, but for the community as well," Ramirez said. "We're here to help." Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, March 17, 2020. Visit MRT.com. Reporter Telegram office will be closed temporarily. The Midland Reporter Telegram office will be closed to the public as a precaution for at least the next 2 weeks. The Midland Reporter Telegram office will be closed to the public as a precaution for at least the next 2 weeks. The Reporter Telegram will continue to publish the paper daily and update the latest news at MRT.com. During this time, for questions about subscriptions, call 688-2700. To reach the editorial and advertising departments, see the box on page 3A of each day's paper.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, March 17th, 2020. Front page. Land resigns as elections administrator by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Deborah Land has resigned as Midland County Elections Administrator. The Elections Commission met Monday to accept her resignation. The commission also appointed Assistant Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves to take over Land's role. County Judge Terry Johnson said Land submitted her resignation letter on Friday, and her official last day was Monday. She did not give a reason for her decision. "She just thought it was time to step down," Johnson said. Her resignation was short and sweet. The Elections Commission is made up of the county judge, tax assessor collector, county clerk, and the chairs for the Republican and Democratic parties. They previously met in December to consider Land's termination following issues with the Midland ISD bond election and subsequent recount, but ultimately did not vote on the item after a motion to terminate failed to receive a second. Johnson defended Land at the time, saying he believed The mishaps provided an opportunity for the office to learn from her mistakes. He said Monday he believed the bond election did influence her decision to resign. I know the bond election caused a lot of stress on a lot of people, and she bore the brunt of it, he said. We wish the best for her. He said he believed pulling off the March 3rd primary elections without any hitches was a way for Land to leave on a high note. Graves will be taking over as elections administrator immediately and leading two upcoming elections in May, a special sales tax election for Midland County Hospital District and a runoff election for the 142nd District Court Judge. I think we have the perfect person in place to step up and take this one by the reins, Johnson said. He said Graves would have been selected for the position previously had she not been experiencing health issues at the time she was considered. Her salary will be $79,000. Johnson said Graves plans to serve as elections administrator for 2 years before retiring. Land will continue to be a county employee. She accepted a position working in intake at the Midland County Sheriff's Office, Johnson said. Officials, MDC budget can weather sales tax revenue decline, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. As members of the board of the Midland Development Corp prepared to receive an update on its infrastructure partnerships, they took a moment to discuss the economic impact of declining sales tax revenues. Sarah Harris, MDC Director of Operations, and Jennifer Fung, the city's interim finance director, assured board members the MDC budget could withstand a 20% sales tax revenue decline from 2019 levels, which the two noted were record highs. Tim Danielson, MDC Director of Business Development, said board members should take recent sales tax revenue declines into consideration as the 2021 budget is prepared. Lori Blong, newly elected City Council Representative for District 4, has been added as a director. The board voted to approve amended bylaws that will expand the number of directors from 5 to 7. The expanded board was the result of discussions between the MDC and City, Wesley Bounds, board chairman, said. There's been such a great response in terms of applicants, people wanting to get involved. There were more people than slots available. Board member Stephen Lowry welcomed the expansion, saying more people would mean more ideas. A resolution authorizing the execution of a memorandum of understanding between the MDC and the City of Midland was unanimously approved. It will allow the MDC to continue marketing real property owned by the city at the Midland International Air and Spaceport. Danielson explained that though the MDC had made great strides in marketing parcels for the city, it had no legal authority to continue those efforts. With its success, he said the corporation felt it was in a position to talk with city officials to obtain legal standing if they wanted MDC to continue its marketing efforts. He said officials are passionate about the future of the space park at the Air and Spaceport and wanted the MDC to continue its work. Part of the platting we're looking out there are 4 additional parcels in Phase 1, and that's left us looking at the remaining 50 acres for Phase 2. He then updated several infrastructure projects the MDC has worked on with the city or Texas Department of Transportation. He offered the recently completed extension of Tradewinds Boulevard from the Scarborough Sports Complex south to Business I-20 alongside the Synergy Plaza, including showing a bird's-eye view of the work courtesy of drone footage. That expansion, Danielson told the board, opens that area to commercial development as well as residential development, estimating it could provide for 500 new homes. Tradewinds, with its center meridians, will serve as a design model for the planned extension of Wadley Avenue, he said. Extension of Fairgrounds Road is also planned over the next several years to Mockingbird Lane, and then to Oxy Boulevard, and then to the Craddock Reliever Route, he said. That should also pave the way for additional commercial and residential development. That extension is timed to the new water tower pressure plan so that 24 months from now, that area will be open up for more development, particularly residential, Danielson said. He said the MDC is also in the design phases for Briarwood and Holiday Hill Road so that when funding comes available, the plans will be ready. Some local daycare centers close. From staff reports. Several Midland child care centers have closed temporarily in response to the global coronavirus pandemic, while others are choosing to remain open. Daycares that have closed are We Care Learning Center, closed this week and planning to reopen March 23rd. Kid Town Daycare is closed except to first responders and hospital workers. They are following Midland ISD closures. New Horizons Child Development Center is closed for the week and scheduled to open March 23rd. An employee said they are currently training staff on best practices recommended by the CDC and new cleaning procedures. Daycares that are remaining open are Peppermint Plantation, Paragon Learning Center, A Precious One Child Care, Day by Day Learning Center, Enviro Kids Preschool and Child Care, and Crystal's Child Care and Preschool, Animal Crackers Learning Center. Little Red Wagon and St. Luke's Child Development Program could not be reached by phone. Local and national news. Stabbing suspects' bonds total $1 million, from staff reports. The suspect in the stabbing Saturday night at Sam's Club was being held Monday on four bonds totaling $1 million, according to the Midland County Sheriff's Office. Jose L. Gomez III was charged with three counts of attempted capital murder, with a $300,000 bond for each count, and one count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon that has a $100,000 bond. Gomez was detained by off-duty Border Patrol agent Bernie Ramirez until Midland police arrived at the scene of the incident that occurred about 7:30 p.m. Saturday. The case has been turned over to the FBI, Mayor Patrick Payton said in a previous Reporter Telegram article. Riddick, food distribution possible because of volunteer support, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick expressed his gratitude Monday for a community that showed a volunteerism that will allow two meals a day beginning today for students who need them, no questions asked. Big and little students can go by any of 27 sites or catch a mobile unit to provide what they might typically be provided for on campus, food. There was a worry inside the community and within the district that the decision to cancel school could be a worst-case scenario for students who depend on their meals at school to get by. That will not be the case, Riddick made the announcement on Monday to go along with a plan available at the district's website. And so as of today, we're going to be reaching back out to those 300 individuals who volunteered to help the district to let them know how we plan to utilize them as the best resource during this time. So very pleased about that. And thank you, Midland, for stepping up in a very big way during this time that we're needing everyone's help to come together. Riddick said the first priority for the district is food, and starting there, the superintendent envisions during the next 2 weeks navigating a pathway for the nearly 30,000 constituents of the district, students and staff. He said an MISD ID is not required to receive the meals, and no one will be asking students' names. The food service is about opportunities for people to eat. We want to make sure that that's taken care of for all of them, Riddick said. Community leaders have referred to the coronavirus saga so far as a fluid situation. That happened again Monday with the MISD's leader making the reference on multiple occasions. When it comes to academics and what might happen, the challenge is still in front of the district's teaching and learning staff, and according to Riddick, all options are on the table. The federal government on Monday recommended the gatherings be no more than 10 people, down from the 50 the CDC recommended on Sunday. He said preparation for the district starts with the 5th, 6 weeks academic period and will continue to determine best practices for AP classes, determining class rankings, including valedictorian, student progression into the next grade or to graduation, and providing guidance when it comes to students looking to take college entrance tests, such as the SAT. While not without academics, MISD leaders also will have to address questions about proms at both schools. Riddick said Monday there will not be a scenario in which the district will have students in school beyond the current end of school, May 22nd. We're not adding days to the end of the year. He also reiterated that Midland ISD students, staff, and parents won't have to worry about State of Texas Assessments of Academic Readiness, STAR, testing this year. Governor Greg Abbott had announced he was waiving the requirements for the test this academic year. Riddick was complimentary of the work he's seen from Midland ISD's employees and wants to ensure they know he will recommend to the board at its meeting on March 24th a resolution that talks about paying staff during this time of closure. The board has to approve that recommendation, he said. Coronavirus briefs from staff reports. Local grocery stores are reducing or considering changing their hours as widespread hoarding continues to make it difficult for retailers to keep supplies in stock. Market Street, a 24-hour chain, will now open at 6 a.m. and close at 11 p.m., a store employee said Monday. Albertsons is discussing changing their hours, an employee said. He said there will be a staff meeting on Monday to discuss the possibility, and any changes will likely be announced by Tuesday. HEB previously announced they would be operating from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. until further notice. The West Texas Food Bank has resumed business with a few modifications, according to a press release. Volunteer groups are limited to 20 people and will work in 2 shifts. Volunteer shifts are 9 to 11 and 1 to 3. The regular volunteer hours on Tuesday, 6 to 9, are still in effect. The volunteer procedures and hours apply to both Midland and Odessa locations. Volunteers who have traveled for spring break are asked to wait 14 days to volunteer, and volunteers who are sick or experiencing cold symptoms are asked to care for themselves first, according to the release. All WTFB classes will be canceled until the end of the month. The senior pantry at the Midland location will continue to operate 10 a.m. to noon, Tuesday and Thursday, and the emergency pantry at the Odessa facility will continue normal operations on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Clients will be asked to drive through, and WTFB staff will load groceries into their vehicles. Mobile distributions will continue as usual. A list of partner agencies and mobile distribution sites is available at westtexasfoodbank.org. Basin PBS will be hosting a live town hall. We're prepared, keeping the Permian Basin safe during COVID-19/coronavirus from the Anwar family studio beginning at 8 p.m. Thursday. The one-hour live event will feature local leaders, educators, medical officials, and mental health advocates from both Odessa and Midland. They will be interviewed in shifts according to their area of expertise. There will not be a live studio audience. The live program can be seen on Basin PBS or via live stream on the Basin PBS Facebook page. Viewers can submit questions for the roundtable before Thursday's program via social media. During the program, they may submit as well via social media or by texting Basin PBS to 877-670-0432. People without access to social media or the internet can call 563-5728. Senior Life Midland is closing the office to the public through March 28th. But will continue its Meals on Wheels deliveries, according to a Facebook post from the nonprofit. Also, the Southeast Senior Center and Midland Senior Center will be closed will be closed to all meetings, training, and gatherings are canceled or postponed. Meals on Wheels kitchen efforts will be open to scheduled volunteers and anyone who has volunteered in the past or current volunteers with more availability who would like to help. Senior Life staff will be answering phone calls and returning messages according to the post. Residents who require assistance should call 689-6693. The Crisis Center of West Texas is closing its administration offices through March 20th, according to a release from CCWTX. The services for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault remain available and free of charge. Other services will be available via phone and video communication, and CCWTX will continue to operate the 24/7 Crisis Hotline and Louise Wood Angel House Emergency Shelter. People seeking shelter or other immediate assistance can call 1-866-627-4747. Because the office is closed, CCWTX is unable to accept drop-off donations this week, according to the release. The Museum of the Southwest is closed through March 24th, so the Midland Downtown Farmers Market is canceling its event planned for Saturday. Farmers Market will continue Saturday morning markets once the Museum of the Southwest resumes their normal business hours. The Farmers Market will be updating its Facebook page with information. Enrollment for St. Anne's Catholic School for the 2020-2021 academic year has been postponed until further notice because of the coronavirus situation, according to the school's development director. Registration was originally scheduled for Thursday and Friday. New registration dates will be announced when they are set. Midland County Public Library branches will maintain regular hours but have suspended all programming, passport services, bookmobile stops, and meeting room reservations effective 1 p.m. yesterday. The branches will begin suspending public computer usage today, said Social Impact and Community Engagement Coordinator Megan Buck. Regal Cinemas will close until further notice beginning today amid nationwide coronavirus concerns, according to a press release. An employee at Synergy Midland said Monday the theater is still open with regular hours and is not limiting the number of people who can be in the auditorium. The CDC on Sunday issued an announcement advising against gatherings of 50 people or more for the next 8 weeks. President Donald Trump, during a press conference on Monday, advised Americans to avoid gathering in groups of more than 10 people. In an effort to take proactive precautions to protect staff and guests, the Petroleum Museum will be closed today through March 29th, according to an email. The outdoor oil patch exhibits behind the museum will remain open during this time. Big Brothers Big Sisters is postponing its fundraiser bowl for kids' sake, Executive Director Kay Kreitz said in an email. The annual event had been scheduled for Saturday. Because of the updated guidelines set by the CDC over the weekend, Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said the following actions will be taken. Odessa Arts office will be closed until April 1st. The black and white ball will be postponed until the fall. Tickets and tables already purchased will be honored at the yet-to-be-determined date. For refunds on tables, tickets purchased for the Black and White Ball or Literary Death Match, email judith@odessaarts.org. Books in Basin is canceled. April board meeting is canceled. All Arts Advocacy Month activities will be suspended, including visit from Randy Cohen from Americans for the Arts, and Community Art Gallery intake will be postponed until no earlier than May 15th. Zoning process begins for new apartments on Tradewinds by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. The process of constructing a new apartment complex to be built at Tradewinds Boulevard and Thomason Drive began Monday when members of the Planning and Zoning Commission unanimously approved an initial zoning request. The request by 87th Street Partners, LLC, begins the process of annexing the next 64.52-acre tract of land that will ultimately be the site of a mixture of one- and two-story buildings. Andrew Mellon, with Maverick Engineering, representing the partners, told the commissioners there are apartment complexes to the right and to the left of the planned project. He added that there are oil wells to the south and the site of a future school across the street. As currently planned, the complex will have 730 parking spaces, including 76 detached garages and 76 garages on the first floor of the two-story buildings. In the other public hearing Monday, commissioners approved a proposed final plat of three lots in the Great House addition, north of Balfour Court and west of Great House Avenue. The final plat corrected the lot lines for the three lots.
Obituaries. Carol Miller. Carol Miller, 83, of Midland, peacefully passed away on Tuesday, March 10, 2020, surrounded by her family. Viewing will be held on Monday, March 16, 2020, from 1 p.m. until 9 p.m., and Tuesday, March 17, 2020, from 8 a.m. until 9 p.m. at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Wednesday, March 18, 2020, at 2 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel, with burial to follow at Rest Haven. Carol was born on December 8, 1936, to Edna and George Hill in Mullen, Texas. Carol graduated from Goldthwaite High School, where she was very active in sports. She attended the University of Texas in Austin, where she met Wayne, the love of her life. They married on June 8, 1957, in Goldthwaite, Texas, then moved directly to Midland, Texas, where her three children were born and raised. Carol was active in the bowling league, where she outscored many of the men who bowled against her. Carol was always involved in the many activities her three children were participating in at the time, including Cub Scouts, baseball, and softball. She also was involved in the Geologist Geophysicist Wives Association. Carol was an amazing artist and loved sharing her talent with others. Her ultimate passion was to take care of her family. She was involved in every activity that her children and grandchildren participated in and was the best cheerleader a child could have in their corner, whether it was sports or life struggles. Carol attended First Baptist Church in Midland. She was very outgoing and enjoyed all that life had to offer. Carol is survived by her husband of 63 years, Wayne David Miller, son Craig David Miller, and wife Angel, son Mark Weldon Miller, daughter Sharon Elaine Miller, grandchildren Justin David Miller, Megan Renee Miller, Caitlin Dawn Lucas, and husband Ben, great-grandchildren Tyrion Barzil, Cilius Gunn, and Amya Nicole Ingram. Pallbearers will be Craig David Miller, Sharon Elaine Miller, and Justin David Miller. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Please direct any flowers to Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory, care of Carol Miller. Norbert Joseph Dickman. Norbert Joseph Dickman passed away of leukemia on March 11, 2020, surrounded by family. He was born in Chicago, Illinois on January 2, 1943, the son of Norbert H. and Helen Dickman. There, he attended parochial school until relocating with his family to California. He received a B.A. in philosophy from St. Patrick Seminary in Menlo Park, California, and a licentiate in theology from the Gregorian University in Rome, Italy, located near the Vatican, in June 1968, and was ordained a Catholic priest. After leaving the priesthood, he received his Juris Doctorate from Hastings College of the Law and his LL.M. from Golden Gate University. After working with the San Francisco law firm of Sullivan, Roche, and Johnson, and then as a partner of Mullins, Wise, and Dickman, he became a solo general practitioner to the service of Mrs. Barbara Faskin in Marin County, California. Over time, Norbert assisted Mrs. Faskin in assembling her various business interests into more efficient and integrated businesses, which were then placed into one family limited partnership. In order to oversee the newly consolidated Fasken interests, Norbert relocated to Midland, Texas in 1988. In 1995, upon Mrs. Fasken's passing, Norbert became co-executor and co-trustee of her estate and trust, co-manager of Fasken Limited, and general manager of Fasken Oil and Ranch Limited, the operating entity for the family business. In 1994, Norbert negotiated the purchase of the historic La Posada Hotel in Laredo, Texas, which rose to become a four-diamond, full-service hotel. He called Laredo his second home, and his love for the border town was mutual, as Laredo bestowed many honors on him, including Mr. South Texas and the Future of Texas Award, among others. He was active on many local nonprofit boards, including Samaritan Counseling Center, the Executive Council of the Boy Scouts, UTPB Advisory Board, Permian Basin Area Foundation, Trinity School, Casa de Amigos, and was recently president of the Endowment Board. He was the director of the Fasken Family Charitable Foundation, the Prairie Foundation, and was involved in teaching religious education at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland, Texas. Norbert is survived by his wife, Deidrea Dickman, his three children, Michael Dickman, Matthew Dickman, and Jennifer Ports, their spouses, Brienne Dickman, Erica Gowdy, and Kip Ports, his stepson, Spencer Gilbert, his seven grandchildren, ages 4 through 7, Logan, Ford, Reagan, Grace, Sloan, Kaylin, and Millie, his two sisters, Sue Horn and Kathy Berry, and their families, and many beloved friends and family. The family is holding a viewing and rosary at Ellis Funeral Home on Monday, March 16, 2020, at 6 p.m., and a mass to celebrate Norbert's life on Tuesday, March 17, 2020, at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be sent to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Judy Winnell Jones Gwelker. Judy Winnell Jones Gwelker passed Friday, March 13, 2020, in Midland, Texas, at the age of 76. She passed following a lengthy illness surrounded by loved ones at her home. She was born in Wichita Falls, Texas, on January 28, 1944, to the parents of Ted T. Thompson and Opal D. Thompson. She attended Midland High School and then began working for Southwestern Bell in 1960. She married Orrin Jones and had three daughters. In October 1991, she married James Anthony Tony Gwelker, and they remained married for 28 years. She remained with Southwestern Bell from 1960 until February 2002. While working at Southwestern Bell during her 42-year employment, she made lifelong friends who remained in touch. She started out as a switchboard operator working split shifts with parting lines and moved her way into becoming one of the first women communication technicians in the Midland area. Upon retirement, she became a lifetime member of the Southwestern Bell Pioneers. She went on to work for the post office for the next 10 years, starting in 2003, before moving to her final job at Legacy Reserves, beginning in October 2013. While at Legacy, Judy made many, many friends that she held dear and near to her heart. She truly loved going to work there every single day. She loved how much fun she was able to have while delivering her mail from office to office and visiting with each employee she met along the way. Halloween and Christmas events with her great-grandchildren at Legacy Reserve brought her great joy. To be able to dress up and bring them in for pictures, fun, and festivities was the highlight of her time at Legacy Reserves. Judy enjoyed traveling, camping, and raising her children. She had eight grandchildren that called her grandma, who enjoyed playing in the backyard, feeding the fish in the pond, and riding with her to buy scratch-off lottery tickets. Judy also had 20 great-grandchildren whom called her Gigi, and she adored dearly. She also spent many hours with them in the backyard, planting flowers, and giving the children a push on the swing. Judy and Tony spent much of their time in the backyard, with Judy all dolled up on her riding lawnmower with her big, floppy hat. They also spent time in Sweetwater, Texas, making improvements to the property where they kept their cows and goats, affectionately named after all their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. In her earlier years, Judy enjoyed bowling on several teams with the S.W. Bell group of friends. She enjoyed volunteering for S.W. Bell's Pioneers and also enjoyed playing bingo and attending country music concerts. In the last few years of her life, she tried to attend as many of the older country music artists at smaller venues as possible. She is preceded by her parents, Ted and Dee Thompson. Both younger siblings, Teda L. McGanner and Stephen T. Thompson. Her niece, Dawn D. Thompson, and great-grandson, Keaton L. Garza Wooten. She is survived by her spouse, James Anthony Tony Galker, and her three children, Wendy K. Kalisic, Ron, and children Valerie Bowman, William, and one son. Anthony Justin, A.J. Kalisic, Lori, and two daughters, Lisa Jones and children Jonathan Wooten, Ariana, and three sons, Victoria Atlee, Galindo, Michael, and three daughters and one son, Katie Wooten and one son, Robin Saverence, Jess, and children Jessica Saverence, Isaac, and one son, Christina Stickle, Caleb, and three sons and three daughters, Ridge Saverence, and one son and one daughter. She is also survived by her mother-in-law, Elizabetha Betty Gwelker, and her 98-year-old World War II survivor, Uncle Clovis Thompson. Judy is also survived by one niece and nephew, Monica and Dax, and several cousins. The family would like to extend a heartfelt thank you to Dr. David Watkins and his office staff, with a special thank you to Mary and Rachel. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Midland Police Department and the Pioneers of Southwestern Bell. Death Notices. George Freeman. George Freeman, 63, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Saturday, March 14, 2020, at his home. A service will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch, Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Raymond Green. Raymond Green, 67, of Midland, passed away Thursday, March 12, 2020. Viewing will be Thursday, March 19th, 2020, from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. A funeral service is set for Friday, March 20, 2020, at 12 p.m. at Mount Calvary Missionary Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. He is survived by his wife, Wilma Green, sons, William Green, Raymond Green, and Anthony Price, two daughters, Neva Price and Tistanisha Price, one brother, two sisters, and numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and numerous nephews and nieces. Tomas Cruz Grimaldo. Tomas Cruz Grimaldo, 85, of Midland, passed away Sunday, March 5, 2020. Viewing will be Tuesday, March 17, 2020, from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m., with a prayer service starting at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. A funeral service is set for Wednesday, March 18, 2020, at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by three sons, Thomas Grimaldo, Juanito, Juan Grimaldo, and Jose Grimaldo, one daughter, Irma Grimaldo, and 11 grandchildren and six great-grandchildren.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Tuesday, March 17th. Disaster declaration up in the air. City and county officials discuss coronavirus options by Michael Merlo. Odessa Mayor David Turner said that he and Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes are talking to other cities about what they are planning to do about issuing local disaster declarations. Early on Monday, Turner said that although there are no confirmed cases of coronavirus in Odessa, they are waiting to see what's coming out of Washington, D.C., before moving ahead with a declaration. You just have to do it when it's an appropriate time, he said. A disaster declaration could be put in place by a mayor or county judge without a public meeting, but an ordinance would need to be put to vote. Early on Monday, Turner indicated that they were looking to draft a declaration. Hayes said early Monday evening that she couldn't justify issuing a local disaster declaration at this time. Turner said that declaring a disaster could help the city of Odessa receive federal and state funding for medical costs and to help the West Texas Food Bank feed citizens who were struggling and ECISD students as well. However, later on Monday, City of Odessa Director of Communications, Devin Sanchez, said Hayes told her that the city is not drafting an ordinance or disaster declaration, but they are definitely keeping their options open. Turner was contacted again, and he said via text message, "We are not in the declaring. We are not drafting an ordinance for a declaration at this time." When questioned why the change, he said, "We are talking to other cities and discussing what they are looking to do." On Monday, President Trump asked for public gatherings to be limited to 10 people and urged Americans to avoid eating and drinking at bars and restaurants and food courts. "This is a bad one. This is a very bad one," he said. Also on Monday, following unreturned phone calls from a number of local officials, Sanchez detailed that all questions related to coronavirus to the city of Odessa, Ector County, the Ector County Health Department and Medical Center Hospital would have to go through her office. She later clarified that there may be press conferences with health officials, but that questions to be answered on a 48-hour basis would have to be submitted to her by noon on days before the press release is sent out. Earlier in the day, Turner said press releases would be issued to communicate with the public as well as press conferences in the coming days. He said, depending on the situation, they may have to turn to teleconferences for meetings. The city is holding meetings to determine coronavirus action that are currently closed to the public, but Turner said, as those decisions are made, they will open meetings. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website details that mass gatherings of more than 50 should be postponed or canceled. Later in the day, however, Trump called for the number to be 10. On Monday, the CDC updated their website, detailing that large events and mass gatherings can contribute to the spread of COVID-19. Examples of large events and mass gatherings include conferences, festivals, parades, concerts, sporting events, weddings, and other types of assemblies. The CDC site details that for the next 8 weeks, organizers, whether groups or individuals, should cancel or postpone in-person events. Turner said that there are other cities in the U.S. that have no cases of coronavirus but have declared an emergency disaster in preparation for the worst. "We just have to be careful," he said. Sanchez said that there will be a press release every 48 hours with updates about coronavirus cases as well as any changes regarding city, county events, or hospitals. Affidavit: Gunman fired one shot at man. After waiting more than 3.5 months, the city of Odessa has released the probable cause affidavit, which details that a 60-year-old man reportedly shot and killed another man outside of his house after the man pulled a cell phone out of his pocket. William Clifford Goebel, 60, was indicted on one count of murder, a first-degree felony, by an Ector County grand jury on February 3rd. Goebel, who taught in the Health Sciences Department at Midland College, has one bond totaling $750,000 and remained in custody as of Monday afternoon at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. The reported fatal shooting happened at 2:36 p.m. November 29, 2019, in the 1400 block of Spur Avenue. Officers were reportedly dispatched to a gunshot victim identified as David Thomas Young, who was lying on the sidewalk in front of the driveway unresponsive and was bleeding from a gunshot wound to the chest. Goebel exited the front door of his residence in the 1400 block of Spur Avenue with his hands in the air. Witnesses identified Goebel as the person who shot Young. Young was reportedly unresponsive and not breathing. He was transported to Medical Center Hospital by Odessa Fire Rescue, where he was pronounced dead. A witness, identified as Jeffrey Thomas Young, stated that David Thomas Young was his father and he arrived at Goebel's residence to discuss a prior altercation involving Goebel almost striking Jeffrey Thomas Young as he rode by on his motorcycle. Jeffrey Thomas Young stated the discussion became an argument, and he saw Goebel pull out a handgun and fired one shot at his father, which struck him in the chest. Another witness, identified as Jose Navarrete Jr., was reportedly standing in his driveway, which was right next door to Goebel's residence, and saw David Thomas Young approach Goebel's residence. Navarrete stated as they were arguing that Young was standing at the end of the driveway, on or near the sidewalk, and Goebel was standing just in front of his opened garage with his handgun drawn. Navarrete reportedly heard Young say, "Let's call them then," and reached into his pocket and pulled out a cell phone. Navarrete stated that as Young pulled the cell phone out of his pocket, Goebel fired a single round from his handgun, which struck Young in the chest. Another witness, identified as Benjamin Allen Clapp, stated he was outside his house, which is two houses south of Goebel's residence. He saw Young approach Goebel's residence and walked in the front yard. Clapp reportedly told officers that as Young and Goebel argued, Young retreated back to the end of the driveway, just a few steps from the sidewalk after Goebel drew his handgun. Clapp saw Young reach in his pocket and pull out a cell phone when Goebel fired a single shot, which struck Young in the chest. A previous release from City of Odessa spokesperson Devin Sanchez, sent at 5:39 p.m., November 29, 2019, stated the murder was due to a disturbance over a traffic dispute. The OA sent a public information request to the City of Odessa for Goebel's probable cause affidavit on December 2, 2019. The City of Odessa sent the public information request to the Texas Attorney General on December 16, 2019, and the Office of the Attorney General of Texas issued an opinion on Friday. The OA filed the lawsuit in January to force the city to release public crime records in a timely manner and in accordance with state law. Prior to the filing, for months, the OA had battled the city to provide public documents to both the OA and the public that include police reports and probable cause affidavits in a timely manner without redacting information that has always been considered public information under Texas law. The city abruptly changed the traditional practice of releasing public crime information following the Odessa mass shooting on August 31, 2019, that resulted in the deaths of 7 people and the wounding of 25 others. Police reports from that shooting that were requested in the days following the incident were only released in late January. It was after the shootings that the city began to demand freedom of information requests for all probable cause affidavits and police reports, which the OA and its media partner, CBS7, argue violates the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA. Information that is always considered public does not require an FOI request, certainly not information that is covered under the TPIA. The change by the city resulted in reports on basic crimes being delayed by days or weeks, and often with large portions of the reports blacked out. In the past, the OA received requested police reports from the municipal court and not the city attorney's office, and often had those records in a few hours and unredacted. The city attorney announced that no records would be released until they were vetted by lawyers for the city. Quick hits. COVID-19 cases. The Texas Health and Human Services website offers updated numbers on cases of COVID-19, coronavirus confirmed cases in Texas. As of 7 p.m. Monday, there were total Texas cases, 57. Harris County had the most cases at 10, and Fort Bend County had 9. There were no reported confirmed cases in either Ector or Midland counties by press time. In the United States, the CDC.gov site showed 3,487 total cases and 68 deaths as of 7 p.m. Monday. That was with 46 states and the District of Columbia reporting. The data includes both confirmed and presumptive positive cases of COVID-19. Visit the Texas site at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at www.cdc.gov/coronavirus/2019-NCOV-cases-N-US. Local info. All scheduled Odessa Municipal Court appearances, including open court, pre-trials, jury trials, and bench trials, have been canceled for the months of March and April. This includes jury duty. Those who are issued citations or who have questions about existing citations may call the Odessa Municipal Court at 432-335-3300. Mission Fitness at the MCH Center for Health and Wellness will be closed today through March 30th at the direction of Medical Center Hospital. The Odessa Ministerial Alliance has canceled the remaining portion of its 2020 Community Lunch and Worship Series due to the COVID-19 crisis. The City of Odessa has canceled the Ray Stoker Jr. Memorial Highway Dedication, which was scheduled Thursday. A ribbon cutting and reception for the American Red Cross, scheduled March 26th, for a new emergency response vehicle, ERV. The Odessa Arts Office is closed until April 1st. Also, the Black and White Ball will be postponed until the fall, and Books in the Basin is canceled along with all Arts Advocacy Month activities will be suspended, including a visit from Randy Cohen from Americans for the Arts. The Midland Community Health Care Services on Monday detailed that per guidance from the CDC, that all Midland clinics must utilize social distancing. There will be no walk-in patients or unscheduled visits to any of the clinics. All must have an appointment. Other corona news. Parkland Health and Hospital System in Dallas began drive-through testing of patients, the Dallas Morning News reported. Testing will be only by appointment and for current Parkland patients, first responders, and healthcare workers. People will be interviewed by phone before they're approved for testing. On Friday, San Antonio opened the state's first drive-through coronavirus testing facility that is prioritizing healthcare workers and first responders. Governor Greg Abbott announced more drive-through testing sites would open in Texas major cities, including Houston, Dallas, and Austin, in the coming weeks, after he declared the coronavirus a statewide public health disaster Friday. The announcement came amid widespread criticism that testing for COVID-19 has been too limited. Austin's first drive-through coronavirus testing center also opened Friday at the hospital group Baylor Scott and White's North Austin Clinic, located off Breaker Lane near the Domain Shopping Center.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.